Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm your host, Vinny Bonfigli, and coming to you live from Bastion, Virginia. The weather has turned. It's starting to get cold, and it's wet, and which means the racing season is coming to a close. The NHRA wrapped up their season on Sunday, out at Pomona, crowning four Mellow Yellow champions, one in Top Fuel, one in Funny Car, one in Pro Stock, and one in Pro Stock Motorcycle. I think we kind of looked at it last week before they hit it, who I thought was going to get it. And it kind of held close to the fact. I already said Top Fuel had it done, and here's how it wound up before the champion was crowned. In the Top Fuel, let's do the final wrap-up for the NHRA Mellow Yellow Series season the way it's done at the race event. We'll go to Pro Stock Motorcycle first. And then work our way to Top Fuel. In the Pro Stock Motorcycle Series, I said it was going to come down to two guys. Eddie Krawick, who was in second. Matt Smith, who was leading the points. And it was kind of fitting because the finals came down to those two for the event win, which would have decided the championship, actually. So Matt Smith qualified at number one. The first person that he was up against was his wife, Angie, who qualified 16th. Eddie Krawick qualified number three. His first round opponent was Karen Stoffer. So round one was championship contenders up against ladies. Pro Stock Motorcycle does have a few ladies running it. Angie Smith, Karen Stoffer, Jill Sampe, who is a three-time NHRA Pro Stock Motorcycle champion, and the winningest female in the NHRA. So, you know, she's no slouch, but she took a few years off to have some kids. So in round one, it was Krawick versus Stoffer. Off the line, Stoffer got it with an 0-15. To his 0-22, but his 6.80 with a 2 was a lot quicker than her 6.93 with a 7. So bike performance got the best of that round. Then it up against Jerry Savoie, who was a champion as well. Not this past year, but actually he got it 2 years ago, I think. Off the line, Savoie 0-33, Krawick 0-35. Savoie went at 6.87 with a 3, but Krawick was faster in the second round than the first with a 6.79 with a 3. Then up against Hector Arana Jr., who was in the hunt for the championship as well. But Krawick took that one 6.86 to Arana's 6.91, setting the stage for the finals. Matt Smith, number one qualifier, on the other hand. Angie did not post a time, so apparently she didn't get off the line. Up against Hector Arana Sr. in round two, he not only got 2 to an 0.49 off the tree, but a 6.79 to a 6.86. ET. In the semis was Matt Smith. Matt Smith went up against L.E. Tonglet, who was another contender. 0.66 to 0.70, 0.04 of a second difference off the tree. Might have made a difference, but Matt Smith again with a 6.76. The Ellie's 7.12 with an 8. So he got smoked on that one, setting the stage for a tight battle against Krawick. Both off the line. With the same reaction time, 0.26. Why do I keep saying Hector? Eddie Krawick, 6.81, good run, but at 198.35. Matt Smith was not to be denied, 6.76 with a 5 with a 201.22 mile an hour. ET takes the win and the title. And also, the low ET of the day with that 6.76 with a 5. But the best reaction time was Karen Stoffer in round one. This is the only round, but she wound up losing that. She had an 0.15. And then the top speed of the day was in the final round by Matt Smith with his 201.22. On the Pro Stock, finals came down to Tanner Gray and Drew Skillman. Tanner pretty much had that one wrapped up. It was his. To lose, and it didn't matter. He wasn't going to. He wound up against Shane Gray, his dad, in round one. And that was a close one, but Tanner's 002. Versus his dad's 067, even though Tanner had 653 with a 1. Shane had 654 with a 9, so it was actually a close time-wise with a hundredth of a second, almost 2/100ths of a second difference of 49 and 31. But Tanner, who qualified 6th with that 002, kind of banked his dad in round 1. Round 2, he went up against our pal Erica Enders, who I tried to get on, but she was doing really good, too. But her reaction time, 0.23, which is not too shabby. Tanner Gray with a 0.003. And had Erica got off either a 0.003 or less, which she's done before, she had the 6.56 with a 2, which would have beat his 6.56 with a 3. I mean, ET-wise, it was that close. Off the light, it wasn't, so Tanner moves on against Jason Line. And off the light, Jason Line with a 00, which call a perfect light, and then a 000. Tanner with an 020, but again, Tanner holding a 653 with a 5 this time. Jason Lyon had problems and kind of just coasted down the track with a 13.22. Drew Skillman, on the other hand, qualified 4th, went up against Alan Pruszynski in round 1. Not a match there. 6.51 for Drew. Alan, 11.79. Then up against Greg Anderson, who is someone who was in the battle for the championship as well. 6.53 for Skillman, 6.54, 0.34 off the light for Drew, and Greg had an 0.58, so he got him there. Then up against number one qualifier, Jeg Coughlin, no time for Jeg, so he did not make the light. Drew Skillman, 6.53 with a 4, and that set the stage for Tanner Gray and Drew Skillman. Off the light, it didn't even matter. Drew Skillman faulted. Red light, minus 002. 6.52 with a 4. Wouldn't have mattered. Tanner Gray with a 0.10. 6.51 with a 9. Tanner takes the win and the championship. Low ET was Skillman with a 6.51 with a 5. Best reaction time, 0.10, Tanner Gray. And Greg Anderson had the top speed of the event, 212.33. Funny car. Finals came down to J.R. Todd, who was leading the points, and Tommy Johnson Jr. J.R. Todd qualified 4th. Tommy Johnson qualified 3rd, so it was pretty evenly matched into the round. TJ takes round 1 from Cruz Pedregon, a 390 to Cruz's 403. Off the light, give it to Tommy with an 089. Cruz with a 104. A little bit back. Round 2 up against Courtney Force, who led the points going into the countdown. Led him pretty good, too. And then in the countdown, something happened that wasn't the same. So, but she qualified 6th. Tommy Johnson Jr. took that round, 0.48 to her 0.75 off the tree, and then Johnson with a 3.91, Courtney with a 3.94. In the semis, Johnson up against Fast Jack Beckman, 391 with a 3. Here's where it got interesting, 065 for Johnson, 086 for Beckman. And here's where the difference, 6/1000ths of a second. Both had a 391, but only Beckman was with a 9 and Johnson was with a 3. So you're looking at a photo finish there. And that set the stage. J.R. Todd, on the other hand, had a, I guess I would say, an easier road to hoe, but still, you got to go through three guys to get the event win. Jim Campbell, round 1, 074, 393. Campbell with a 966. Round 2 up against Bob Tasca III, 396 for Tasca, 395 for Todd. 068 for Todd, 062 off the light, pretty even there. Then up against Ron Capps. Capps with a 393 with an 060. J.R. Todd a little quicker in reaction and a little quicker down the track, 053 and a 388 with a 9. Tommy Johnson Jr., 055 to J.R.'s 049 off the light. 388 with a 9 for Johnson, 387 giving JR the win. Bowie T, 387 in the final round for JR. Best reaction time, John Force, 029. Old John found something there off a light to shame. What did he do? Let's go back and look. He went up against Fast Jack Beckman, but lost in the round. Beckman had a 393. Force had a 402. So must have had a little, which is a pretty good run. They must have took a little bit out of the clutch and or left a little too much in, I don't know which, and wasn't enough for a hole shot difference, because you're looking at figure 7/100ths for a 4-0 difference there, plus 2. They're looking at 9/100ths of a second difference and only 6/100ths of a second reaction difference. So that was the big difference there. If John Force could have gotten to the 3-9s, he might have got that win and moved on, but wasn't to be for John Force Racing. The runner-up in the points who led him up until the last couple of events, Robert Height, who was the defending champ. Where are you at, Robert? There we go. Qualified fifth and lost to Bob Tasca in round 1. Bit of spinning the tires there, because it was a 538 to Tasca's 398, so that kind of ended Robert Height's chances. And in Top Fuel, Torrance in the finals against Tony Schumacher, the Sarge. Torrance qualifying number 2, the Sarge qualifying number 8. Round 1, the Sarge up against Scott Palmer. Schumacher with a 369 with a 4, and Palmer's 373. There's some fast times there, 059 off the light for Schumacher, 066 for Palmer. Up against Bill Litton in round 2, who took round 1 from number 1 qualifier Leah Pritchett. Litton did not take the light, so Schumacher ran solo and didn't have to burn up the car. Ran a 466-086, just coasting in there. Guess he wasn't too interested in lane choice. Then up against Blake Alexander in round 3. 065 for Schumacher, 080 for Alexander, 370 with a 5 for Schumacher, 376 with a 4. 6/100ths of a second gave the win to Schumacher. Torrance, on the other hand, up against Cameron Furry. Not even close. Furry did get off the light, but had problems. Wound up with a 10.3. Torrance with a 399. 062 to 069 for Torrance off the light. Didn't matter. Then up against Billy Torrance, that's Steve's dad, in round two. They faced each other a few times this year. I think once came for the win, and I think Steve beat his dad then. .057 off the tree for Steve. .082 for Billy. .367 with a 4 for Steve, besting his dad's .371 with a 2. Then up against defending champ and number 3 qualifier, Brittany Force. .069 for Torrance. .079 for Brittany. .370 with a 5 for Torrance. .370 with an 8 for Brittany. It was that close. I think if Brittany would have got out a little quicker, she would have had to get off the tree 2/100ths quicker to get the whole shot. I mean, the 3/1000ths was enough of a difference, but being there was a 1/100th of a second difference, made the gap a little bigger. So, final round, Tony Schumacher, 053 with a 3700. Oh, that's probably one of the lowest ETs of the day. We'll check the ET winner after we get done this. Off the tree, 029 for Torrance. 3/100ths quicker than Schumacher. ET 370 with a 2, which put Torrance ET 2/1000ths slower than Schumacher. But 029 versus the 053s, Torrance with the whole shot win. Takes the Wally. Low ET was not Tony Schumacher. It was Steve Torrance with a 367 with a 4. It's like, man, where did he pull that one off? Round two against Miss Dallas. Spanked him. Best reaction time, 029. Torrance did in the finals. Top speed, Brittany Force. With a 333-mile-an-hour speed. So let's wrap up who did what as far as championships go in Pro Stock Motorcycle. Matt Smith takes the championship from Eddie Krawick, beating him by 39 points. Congratulations, Matt. It was his third championship, believe it or not. So a new face atop the Wally podium there in Pro Stock. Tanner Gray, like I said, it was his to lose. He held on by taking the win. Beat Jake Coughlin Jr. for it with 187-point difference. Drew Skillman, the finalist, with 199 back. And Erica Enders, who was third, dropped to fourth. I've seen a lot of positives in Erica's performance this year. Her ETs are getting better, so they're figuring something out. In the funny car division, J.R. Todd kind of walked away. It was a lot closer, but takes it from Robert Hite, who was looking for his third championship and second in a row. It was 194 back after losing in round one, so that points gap got bigger as JR went to the finals. In Top Fuel, like I said, it was his to lose. It wasn't even close. Steve Torrance taking the championship, Tony Schumacher finishing second in the points as well as second in the race. So Torrance gets his win. It was his last year. He's thought, but Brittany Force came on to outperform him when it counted in the countdown and wound up taking her first ever NHRA Top Fuel Championship. So that puts her with her teammates, her dad, John, who has 16, brother-in-law, Robert, who has 2, and now Brittany has 1, looking for Courtney to get it all together to make her the 4th John Force Racing driver, and 3rd, making John and his 2 of his 3 daughters with NHRA championships. The only one who doesn't have one that fell a little short too, Robert Height in 2009, Ashley Force Hood. I don't know if Ashley's looking to get back in the car and get antsy again or what, but as of right now, it doesn't appear so. But she did have that shot. So Matt Smith takes the title. Pro stock goes to Tanner Gray, who had a phenomenal season. He's not even 20 years old. Funny car goes to J.R. Todd. I think it's his first. And top fuel, Steve Torrance. There you have the NHRA standings. In ARCA news, Sheldon Creed is moving up to the Truck Series next year. And ARCA Series returns to Madison International Speedway next season. Noah Gregson and Johnny Sauter are ARCA grads, locked into the Final Four at Homestead. We'll get into that, so let's look at that. In other NASCAR news, sad to announce, and I'm sure everybody's heard it, that legendary driver David Pearson, the Silver Fox, passed away at age 83. It always came down to Pearson or Petty back in the day. Pearson has the second most amount of wins, won 175 races in just 574 starts. Second, of course, to the King, who has 200. So it was the rivalry between Pearson and Petty that set the stage for NASCAR's transformation into a mainstream sport with national appeal. Petty called Pearson the greatest driver he ever raced against. I think Petty and Pearson won 3 championships, won 7. But Petty's getting up there too, so. Pearson won a lot with the Wood Brothers, but never won a championship with them. So, put into the NASCAR Hall of Fame in 2011. Won 10 times at Darlington. The track name dubbed Too Tough to Tame or the Lady in Black. So, sad day in NASCAR when that legendary driver, David Pearson, called it, left us. So prayers to him and his family. And hope all turns out well. Brazilian Grand Prix was run as well. Hamilton wins the race, and Mercedes wins the manufacturer's title. So I guess the The Formula One season is now done. Just like everything in motorsports is wrapping up. So that comes down to the only series with an event left this coming weekend. The Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series are going to wrap up their season in Homestead, starting on Friday for the Trucks. So on that path, Brett Moffitt takes the win out at IMS Raceway, which is Phoenix International at one time. Noah Gragson started from the pole. Harrison Burton in the third spot. Grant Enfinger fourth. Stuart Friesen fifth. Tyler Ankrum sixth. Johnny Sauter seventh. Eighth, Derek Krause. Ninth, Christian X. And rounding out the top 10 will be Sheldon Creed. He'll just getting his feet wet in the number two next year when he goes full time. So it was a good run for Sheldon as well. And I guess his debut, he wasn't running for points. So they give him a start at the end there. Margin of victory, 0.45 seconds, almost a half second. Average speed, 95.004. 150 lap race, ran for an hour, 34 minutes and 34 seconds. No overtime. So finished as scheduled. Stage one, Brett Moffitt took the win. Stage two, Harrison Burton won that one, setting the stage for the final event, which Moffitt reclaimed and took the win there. With the win, it was Moffitt's sixth in the Camping World Truck Series. Five cautions for 33 laps, eight lead changes amongst six drivers. Let's look at the points. The final four, as they stand, Brett Moffitt, Justin Haley, Johnny Sauter, and Noah Gragson. Sauter, Haley, and Moffitt got in by locking in, and Gragson took it on points. Eliminated, Matt Crafton, who finished 11th, and Grant Enfinger, who finished 11th. Yes. And Enfinger, who finished 4th. So Enfinger needed the win. So that sets the stage for Homestead for the EcoBoost, Ford EcoBoost 200. So Ford EcoBoost is taking the weekend. It's always a Ford weekend. So this year it's the EcoBoost. And there's your final four. Sauter, Haley, Moffitt, and Gragson. Let's hear from our winner and his crew chief, Scott Zipidelli, and team owner, Shigeki Hattori. Number six, Kobe Toyopet Toyota. Toyota in Japan, when I was there, was not known as Toyota. It was known as Toyopet. We had Datsun. They had Nissan. Now, Nissan is universal. And, of course, Mazda was Mazda and Honda was Honda. They had Suzuki cars over there, which we didn't have here at the time. Now we do. It's just, I'm talking 1977, 78 versus 2017, 2018 in the racing season. So here's the winning team of Moffitt, Zipidelli, and Hattori.
We're going to continue our post-race media availability. We're now joined by the race-winning team, Brett Moffitt, driver of the number 16, Kobe Toyota, Toyopet Toyota, and crew chief, Scott Zipidelli, and team owner, Shiggy Hattori. We're going to open it up to questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand. We'll get you a mic. We'll start here with Matt.
Matt Weaver with Auto Week. This question's for Scott. I hate to go back to a familiar topic, but the last press conference we had in here, the GMS guys had suggested that if you guys were to bring the OEM motor, that they would be toast. And I'm curious if you guys made up your mind which motor you would bring yet and what goes into that process.
Well, they didn't have very good trucks today. Honestly. I would love to stir the pot right now because that's all they do is whine about our engines. But if you look at the race itself, we kill them through the corners. Our truck drives better than their truck. The engine has some advantages in some spots. All I'll say is, yes, it does rev higher, but it only revs higher when you're shifting from second, third, and fourth. Once you get in high gear, it does not rev any higher.
On a similar and more positive note, just the pride in being able to win, make one more race for the OEM motor.
I'm very proud of it. It's a great piece. It's a proven piece. It's all I can say is, you know, we swapped engines last week and went to Texas and qualified, but I think best than we've qualified all year. Qualified fourth and finished third. So I think this team is strong enough to perform at the top level with either piece. We picked the OEM engine beginning of the year based off of the rule books, and the rule book's changing, and we have to adapt to that. Chris and TRD enough for all that they've done for us and give us great pieces, but we had a really good truck today, and the engine is one major component of the whole package.
Was I heard the Chris?
Chris Nightcatch.com. Brett, are you the favorite to win the championship next week?
Yeah, I think we've proven all year we are, you know. At Martinsville, I got asked, maybe not the favorite, but we're right there with Johnny. At Martinsville, I got asked if we were a dark horse, and I said, well, we have the second most wins, and now we're only one back. So now we're locked into Homestead. I will say the beginning of the chase didn't go as planned for us. We weren't executing the races to 100%, but the last two or three races, I feel a great job of that, and it's shown in the results. We have a second, a third, and a win in the last two races. So, I think we can go to Homestead and execute.
And Chiggy, your investment that you've made, spent millions of dollars and trial and error and sponsors after sponsors, you now get the opportunity to run for a championship. What does that mean to you and your organization?
Well, definitely that's big for our sponsors. And they spend a lot of money. Then they trust all the teams and myself. And one of the main sponsors is Kobe. The president was here, and that's so big for us.
Kobe. The steaks, they bring steaks. Kobe beef is some. Anyway. There you have your Truck Series winning team getting set for next week's finale. I'm kind of interested in who might do this. I don't have a recap on all the series. I just saved it for the Cup Series to see I can make my prediction. So we'll have to wait and see. But I don't know. Let me see who's in it again. You got a Toyota, Chevy. I think the favorite that is going to come down to these two, Moffitt and Sauter. Sauter already has a championship under his belt. So he might be my favorite to championship and possibly the race. But you never know in the Truck Series. It's the most exciting series in all three divisions in my mind. So we'll just have to wait and see. In Xfinity Series, let's come down to another locker inner, somebody who was probably on the outside looking in. After Martinsville won by a spoiler, brings it down to – Cole Custer taking, of course, last week's win, locking him in, comes down to this week, and Christopher Bell takes the win. Daniel Hemrick was second. Matt Tift was third. Austin Sindrick was fourth. Ryan Preece was fifth. Tyler Reddick, sixth. Brandon Jones, seventh. Cole Custer was eighth. John Hunter Nemechek, ninth. Spencer Gallagher rounds out the top ten. Well, Spencer there, since he's back in the car, has done real well. So he had a chance to make the playoffs, but kind of ruined it when he was suspended. Matter of fact, because he did have a win, and win you get in, so that suspension didn't help. So, margin of victory, 1.88 seconds. Average speed, 100 mile an hour, 200 laps, 200 miles. Went the distance, 1 hour and 59 minutes and 14 seconds. It was Bell's eighth victory in the Xfinity Series. Six cautions for 34 laps, seven lead changes amongst five drivers. So let's see who makes the final four. Cole Custer, Christopher Bell, Tyler Reddick, and Daniel Hemrick. Elliott Sadler fell a little short. Matt Tift as well. Justin Allgaier didn't have the playoff run that he needed. He was in the top eight, so he needed a win to get in, and it wasn't to be. So that takes it all down to Homestead, where, I don't know, it's either going to be, I'm thinking either Cole Custer or Christopher Bell takes the Xfinity Championship. As far as the race goes, interesting, could be somebody other than one of the final four. So here's your race-winning team. Of Bell, Jason Ratcliffe, and owner representative Steve D'Souza on their win and making it to the final four.
All right, if I could have your attention in the media center, we can continue with our post-race media availability. We're now joined with the race-winning team, Christopher Bell, driver of the number 20 GameStop Just Cause for Toyota, Crew Chief Jason Ratcliffe, and Executive Vice President of Xfinity Series and Development at Joe Gibbs Racing, Steve D'Souza. If you do have a question, please raise your hand. We'll get you a wireless mic. We'll start here and work our way in the back.
Christopher Bell, Justin Schuler, Speedway Media. First off, congratulations on getting to Homestead with the win. On the restart, you had quite a few having that experience, having the decision to go at a high side or low side. Even though the track configuration hasn't really changed, start-finish line moving obviously probably played a mental game. Did you see a kind of advantage of choosing the inside or the outside at all?
Honestly, I just left that up to my spotter and crew chief. It's a lot easier for me if I just say, hey, what do I do? And they told me to pick the bottom, so I did. I think the advantage of being on the bottom, though, is you could shortcut the racetrack as much as you needed to. And then whenever you got into turn one, if this situation would have arose, I could have just drove in there and split up into them and be on the offense instead of the defense. So, just being on the bottom. And thankfully, I didn't have to do that, and there weren't any late race yellows. But the big advantage I had was my car was not loose in at all. So I could attack turn one as hard as I needed to get myself clear. And that was ultimately what, you know, got me in cleaner.
Matt Weaver with Auto Week, one for Bell first, to your left, and one to Jason afterwards. For you, Christopher, how hard was it not to get suckered in when you were racing the 22, and that got kind of...
I don't know if you were listening to my radio or not.
I was.
Oh, yeah. I was full suckered in. But luckily, I have Jason and Tony Hirschman yelling at me. And, you know, that's I told him that right before I got in the car, and that's what I've been telling him for, I don't know, at least the last couple days. I just said, you know, I need someone yelling at me. And I feel like I do a really good job managing the first half of the race. But once, especially once you get to the end of stage two, this week you have still over half the race left. But to me, at the end of stage two, I start getting amped up. You know, the 22 is racing me like he does every single week. And, you know, I got frustrated. And I was standing, you know, we had the best pit crew on pit road and got us out in front of him, so I didn't have to deal with him anyway.
Yeah, on that note, Jason, does it come natural for you to have to yell at your driver?
No. Well, I don't know. I have worked with Kyle Busch, so I love him. So just saying that. No, it doesn't. I let Tony do that. He does a good job of managing it. And he's talking in my left ear and then listening to Christopher in my right ear. So, it you know, I can't see the whole racetrack. Tony can see what's going on. But I'm definitely in Tony's left ear saying, hey, man, we got to, you know, stop this before it gets out of control. So we had a moment like that today, but everyone did a good job of handling it, and Christopher did a good job of managing it, thankfully. And like you said, the pit crew got us out front, and it wasn't a big deal in the end.
Off topic for you too, Jason. There's been a lot of talk this week about the storylines of the sport off the track concerning what goes on in the shop, penalties. The word cheating is thrown around a lot. Do you feel like crew chiefs and teams are sometimes unfairly vilified because they don't totally understand what goes on when cars aren't on the track? Kind of a complicated question, I know, but yeah.
Do
so,
what now?
So obviously, so let's say with the Forest situation
right.
This past week, people throw the word cheat around a lot, and we're talking about things that are sometimes fractions of a fraction of an inch.
Yep.
And I think sometimes, just my opinion, I feel like it's from a lack of education from fans who don't understand that competition takes place off the track as well as on it. So I'm just curious what your perspective is as a crew chief in educating fans what goes on when cars are not racing on the track.
Well, I think no different than any other sport. You know, unfortunately, every other sport, they deal with their penalties immediately, most of them. A guy gets a holding call, it's immediately a penalty. And they don't talk about it on Monday and Tuesday. So for this sport, we talk about it on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. And so I think sometimes it gets blown out of proportion. You work hard, you know, to try to find every advantage you can. If you don't, you shouldn't be doing this, is my opinion. But, you know, at the same time, you got to be smart. And NASCAR has rules in place, and I'm glad they do. Otherwise, it would get out of control. But I think I have a different perspective, and that is, you know, the four car, to me, okay, big deal. But, you know, he took that risk and he got caught, and he's going to have to pay the consequences. So if you're going to do it, fine. You're not going to be the only one doing it, I can promise you that. But if you get caught, then, hey, keep your chin up, keep digging. So that's the way I look at it. To me, it's not a huge deal. Again, everyone is trying to find an advantage where they can. It's a tough sport, and you got to search everywhere you can to get it. And, you know, Ronnie's a great crew chief. He'll win a lot of races. He'll keep winning a lot of races. He's got great race cars, and I'm pretty sure sitting right here that the four car, you know, I don't know exactly what they were doing, but on any given day, you can probably find something like that on every car out there. So I'll leave it at that.
Your Xfinity Series team. Talking about their trip to the Final Four. Now for the main event of the weekend. The Can-Am 500. Well, as you may well know, Kevin Harvick won the race last week, locking him in to the Final Four, or so we thought. Tuesday, the hammer dropped. That's what happens on Tuesday, usually after the show, because then I get the emails in my inbox and talk about it the following week, which is today. So Kevin Harvick, who was a lock in the Final Four, had his win stripped, points taken away, and crew chief suspended due to I guess it was an illegal spoiler. Well, he was accused of cheating, or the team was. He kind of got screwed in it because they said he had an unfair advantage. He, you know how that works. So it comes down to who was going to lock in this week. Being the win was taken, I didn't see who was awarded the win. So, which would have locked somebody in, whoever finished second, if they were in a playoff contention, or so I thought. Anyway, that being said, they left it up for grabs for this week. So it came down to who was going to take checkered flag to lock in for next week. If you remember, Logano took round one at Martinsville with a late race incident with Martin Truex Jr. battling for the win. So that left Kyle Busch, Truex, Harvick, Kurt Busch, Elliott, Chase Elliott, Eric Almirola, and Clint Bowyer battling it out to get into that final four. Well, Bowyer and Elliott got into a wreck when Denny Hamlin got into the wall with Almirola. They were battling, and then one got into the other and took Chase Elliott with him. Bowyer, on the other hand, had problems on his own. So Kurt Busch, he was eliminated. So you're basically looking at your bottom four eliminated themselves throughout the race. Kurt Busch had engine problems, and kind of eliminated that. Almirola, I think, was the only one. And it was Kurt Busch and Hamlin and Elliott and Bowyer. Almirola did have a shot at it, I do believe. Let me just check the standings. But here's where I'm going with this. Kyle Busch goes on to win the race. Led twice for 117 laps, margin of victory over second place Brad Keselowski, who was eliminated in the playoffs the last round by half a second. Average speed, 98.3 miles an hour. 312 laps, a couple of red flags. So they wanted to clean it up. So Kyle Larson was third. He was eliminated. Okay, Eric Almirola avoided that. It was Kurt Busch and Hamlin. Eric Almirola was fourth. He was in a shot to win. He was in third and in a good restart spot. It came down to tires. Brad Keselowski had fresher tires. Kyle Larson had fresher tires because they pitted late. Eric Almirola had fresher tires than Kyle Busch, but Kyle Busch, right place at the right time, went on the win, locking into the final four. So that left two spots open. Almirola needed the win. Harvick didn't. Truex didn't. Jamie McMurray came in. Harvick came in fifth. He was penalized for pit road infraction, had to make up some ground. Jamie McMurray was sixth. Matt Kenseth, back in the sixth car for the race at Phoenix, was seventh. Austin Dillon, 8th. William Byron, 9th. Bubba Wallace rounds out the top 10. Martin Truex Jr. wound up 14th, led twice for 8 laps. But the bulk of the lead goes to Harvick for 73 laps and Kyle Busch for 117 laps. Your stage winners were Chase Elliott in stage 1, Kyle Busch in stage 2, and needless to say, he held on to take the checkered flag. It was Kyle's 51st Monster Energy Cup Series victory, so he's climbing that ladder. There were 10 cautions for 68 laps, 2 red flags, one on lap 264, and the other one on lap 287. First one was for 10 minutes and 28 seconds, and the second one was a shorty, 5.56, almost 6 minutes there. So team lead changes amongst eight drivers. So everybody that was in the finals had a shot at this until that wreck happened. So here's how it stands. I'm going to list them in wins and overall points while they're all evened out. Joey Logano, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex in third, Kevin Harvick in fourth. The big three plus Logano. So Logano supplants Keselowski in last year's final round playoffs. So it's going to come down to these four guys. So let's hear your race-winning driver, Kyle Busch, and what he had to say about clinching the win, taking the win and clinching a spot.
The winner of the Can-Am 500, Kyle Busch, driver of the number 18 M&M Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. Congratulations, Kyle. We'll go ahead and open it up for questions. Please raise your hand and we will get to you. We'll start over here with Jerry.
Jerry Jordan, KingdomTires.net, PRN. Kyle, you didn't have to go out there and win that race, but in true fashion, you put a show on. And how good does it feel to go into Miami with a win and momentum?
Yeah, it certainly feels really good. I mean, it's better if you got a shot to win, to go ahead and win than to not. So, obviously, just the beginning of the race was not quite as good as we wanted it to be. We kept working on the car all day long, kept making it better. It was super good and strong on those restarts, and we were able to kind of pick some guys off and get ourselves farther up towards the front. Wasn't sure what all was going to happen there with that we came to pit road under green and then the caution came out and then being a lap down, all that. I thought that kind of ruined our chances for being able to have a win today. But overall, just a lot of crazy things happened there at the end and got us in position to where we could capitalize on that. And feels good to go off in the next week with a win under our belt and hopefully do it again.
There you have Kyle Busch talking about getting the win. He was a lap down. He was penalized as well. But you can't knock the guy's talent all you want. But guess what? It's just not going to be there. So who am I looking for this week as the final four? Odds-on favorite is Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick to me. Martin Truex and Joey Logano. Martin Truex said in Martinsville, Joey will not win the championship. So which means, what's he going to do to keep Joey from winning the championship? Martin Truex Jr., great driver. He has great cars. Moving on to Gibbs Racing next year. Furniture Row closing up shop. Kind of sad because they're a one-car team. They've been in the league for a while, brought Kurt Busch in, which increased the profile of the team, didn't win a championship. I don't even know if they won any races for that matter with Kurt. Then brought in Truex, who I wasn't sure about, but they wound up winning a lot of races and a championship. Now, of course, when Furniture Row drove Chevys with Kurt, they had Kurt Busch. They switched to Toyota, and they had Chevys. They won a few, but then they went to Toyota and partnered with Gibbs. So they did something to take it from the Joe Gibbs crew last season and wound up winning a championship and won it in the final race over Kyle Busch. So you're looking for two guys that are sort of teammates this year that will be teammates next year. And Kevin Harvick, who finished fourth last year, and then Brad Keselowski, who's not in the playoffs, was your other one. He was there. But Joey Logano, who's in the playoffs, finished sixth, where Keselowski finished seventh. So they were pretty even last year. And Busch were even last year. And Harvick, he is the lone non-teammate of anybody except manufacturer with Logano. So you got two Fords, two Toyotas in the finals. Would have loved to see Chase Elliott kind of mix it up a bit. he turned it on then at the end of the year, winning Watkins Glen, and then won again in the playoffs to help him out. But he's growing yet. Wait till next year. He'll be a little more of a force, you know, take a while. So right now, who do I think is going to win? Well, Truex insists Logano won't win the championship, so which means he might have to retaliate for Martinsville. And Marty is not known for being able to trade some paint without hurting his own self. Throw it down between Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. And the way that it's been going, you got Kyle Busch with 8 wins and Kevin Harvick with 8 wins. Of course, that includes the ones in the playoffs. So what I'm trying to say is, after the win this past week, it's either going to come down to one of these two guys, and I don't know. I think this Harvick rebound championship, or does Kyle Busch pretty much do it? Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, well, Harvick did start on the pole. He led 73 laps in Phoenix, and Kyle Busch started sixth and led 117 laps. And, of course, Kyle Busch led the last 45 laps, so I'm going to have to go out on a limb and say it goes to – I'm going to give it to Harvick. If you all think, go to my Garage Talk Live Facebook page, and I'll post it up that I'm picking Harvick. Who do you all pick? Anyway, that's our show for today. Hope everybody enjoyed it. We'll see you all next week. Wrap up the season, and I'll make an announcement whether we're going to stay on Tuesdays during the off season or move to Sunday nights. I might move to Sunday nights just because I'll have somebody to talk to. See if I can bring any co-host. Somebody help me kill time with. And we're going to, you know, bring in guests who maybe bring Liliac back on, Cat Beale, Audra McLaughlin, a musical, bring some actors and stuff like that. Anyway, we'll see you all next week. I'm your host, Vinny. You've been listening to Garage Talk Live on blogtalkradio.com/Garage Talk Live. Yes, we have our own page. So, all next week. Good day and good racing for the last time, because the season is over by now.